said I'm ready to do it, I can't be afraid now. Put me on the stage now, I'm ready to rage now. I feel like an animal stuck in a cage and I'm ready to break out.
Hey guys, Jay here, and welcome to another episode of the Mindset with Muscle podcast. I have a fantastic guest for your listening pleasure today, and it's Stephanie Harrison. Stephanie is an expert in the science of happiness and the creator of the New Happy Philosophy. She has a master's degree in positive psychology from the University of Pennsylvania. Her company, The New Happy, has revolutionized the way that people understand and pursue happiness using their artwork, a newsletter, videos, podcasts, and resources which reach millions of people around the world every single month. In this episode, we talk about where people go wrong with happiness, why success doesn't always equate to happiness, and how the right goal setting can set you up on the path to true happiness. You're going to get a lot of value out of this conversation, so sit back, relax, and enjoy this incredible podcast with Stephanie Harrison. Stephanie, welcome to the Mindset Muscle podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here with you.
Oh, you're welcome. I want to kick straight off, Stephanie, with happiness. And it's something that, of course, you're incredibly passionate about talking about. And I'm just interested to kind of get the backstory of where it all started, where you were focused on not only finding your own happiness, but just trying to kind of understand where so many people go wrong with happiness.
Yeah, you know, I think that my own pursuit of happiness really began with my own experience of unhappiness. I think that from what I can tell, a lot of people seem to have a similar journey where they have a difficult life experience or they're struggling, and then that kickstarts them off into this pursuit of well-being or of a pursuit of a different type of life. So for me, my real journey began with living in New York City, having this very demanding but, you know, kind of quote-unquote fancy job that I thought would make me happy. I had the apartment that I thought would make me happy. I had the friends, and nothing was really working. In fact, I was absolutely miserable and started struggling with my health, both physical and mental, and really feeling this kind of pervasive sense of hopelessness and feeling like my life didn't matter, that I wasn't living in alignment with my true self. And that manifested in all of these different ways, including the state of unhappiness and ill-being. And it was in that moment that I decided that there had to be a better way. There had to be something that I was doing wrong, or I had been given some incorrect information about the things that would make me happy. And from there, that's what sparked me to want to go actually study happiness and figure out what I could do differently first and foremost. And then that eventually expanded into how I might be able to help other people.
Incredible. So where do you, based on your own journey, where do you think people go so wrong when it comes to happiness?
So I think that my belief is that, you know, after this last 10 years of research that I've done on happiness and well-being, my belief is that our big problem is that our society has conditioned us into pursuing all of the wrong things for happiness. So we've been told a billion times throughout the course of our lives that there are certain things that you need to do or to be in order to be happy. And unfortunately, the scientific evidence proves that these things not only don't make you happy, but they actually lead to misery and to unhappiness. So it's not even like you're not moving towards your goal, it's you're moving in the opposite direction of your goal. And that was what happened to me. And so part of the first step, I believe, for so many of us is unwinding these stories that we've been told about what we need to do in order to be happy. And then when we do that, we can open ourselves up to what the pursuit of happiness really looks like.
I think of a lot of people, it all starts with when you're younger. It's like you want to you want to be somebody, you want to be something.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it, you know, when you kind of dig deep enough and you ask yourself enough whys, it just tends to be really that answer of, I just want to be happy. But it's just, and I think it's just this constant exploration of going, okay, cool, so in order to be happy, I need to, you know, have a successful job. In order to be happy, I need to have a successful relationship. Where is it that we're kind of going wrong with that? Because by the sounds of it, you know, I think a lot of people talk about this kind of conditional happiness. You know, once I have this thing, I'll be happy. Do you think that's one of the, you know, big thing where we get so wrong this day and age?
Yeah, of course. I think that, you know, if you think about it from, as you're saying, from the time that we were little, we've been conditioned into this idea that happiness is some sort of destination that you can reach. I know for myself, I believed that if I could just run through this, you know, checklist I had for my life in my head, then once I did that, then I would experience happiness. And I think that my personal breakdown came because I had checked off the things that were on my list and I was actually quite miserable. And so it was almost like an existential crisis of, well, what have I done wrong here? Because I did everything I was supposed to do. I followed the path that everyone told me would work and it didn't. And I think that this idea that happiness exists in the future as this permanent state of being that you can experience once you, you know, have that list checked out and fulfilled, it's not true. It's not possible. You talk to any single person out there who has gotten what they want and they're going to tell you, like, they still have hard days, they still struggle, they still feel lost and confused. And no matter what you kind of quote get in your life, it's not going to lead to a state of lasting happiness. And I think one of the core myths of this conditioning, which is something I call old happy, is that you can achieve your way into happiness. If you just do these things, then you will experience that state of joy. And as hard as it is to let go of, because it's a kind of a comforting idea, right? Like, oh, if I can just organize my life in the perfect way and become really productive and really successful and all of that, then I'll get this beautiful goal at the end. If we can let go of that and recognize that happiness is something that happens to us in the present moment and it's the way that we live, the way that we exist in the world, then we can start to move towards that because we've accepted reality and now we can take action in alignment with it.
Something that you mentioned there, Stephanie, is old happy. I was just wondering whether you could expand on that, because something that you spoke about are kind of three influences with that, and three of which are being capitalism, individualism, and dominance. And I'm really fascinated by what you mean by those three and really how they kind of affect our happiness in this old system.
Yeah, of course. So I call old happy, that's my word for what our society tells us about happiness, what we need to do and be in order to be happy, as well as the cultural and the institutional conditions that spring up to support that. And so we've internalized these messages from these core forces that you've just described of capitalism, individualism, and dominance. And what they teach us is this set of beliefs about who we are and what we need to do. So we're living under the belief that in order to be happy, we have to always be successful and productive. We always have to push more and more and more. We have to do everything by ourselves. We can never lean on other people. And we have to perfect ourselves. We always have to be the best in some way and experience the power that comes from doing that. That's where our self-esteem comes from, not from being our unique selves, but being better than the person next to us. And all of those messages combined come together to teach you that you have to be perfect, you have to achieve more and more, and you have to do it all by yourself. And those messages are so pervasive in our society that even when you start to like pull back the onion a little bit, you can see how they show up everywhere in our lives and how they've taught us these stories. And unfortunately, as I said, you know, they're actually making us quite miserable. And so unwinding these old happy beliefs is, you know, it's first and foremost about bringing awareness to them. And then it's starting to figure out, well, is this actually serving me? And if not, what would a better way, a better pursuit of happiness look like?
Something I always say is life's a bit of a paradox. And, you know, the three things that you kind of said there about, you know, capitalism, you know, people are, you know, trying to become successful.
Yeah.
You know, you need to become successful, when actual fact, you get more success when you help other people succeed.
Yeah.
So it's kind of counterintuitive. And when you talk about happiness, it's like, well, you know, when I'm helping other people become happy, I tend to be more happy myself. When I'm contributing more to the world, when I'm helping people level up, and, you know, this is what I do every single day, you know, jumping on social media, doing, you know, content, you know, asking people what they're struggling with. And, you know, I've been doing that for the last 10 years. It's like, why is this always feel good? And it's like, because you're helping yourself by helping other people.
Yeah. It's the truth.
And it's this kind of thing where you just realize that, like, as you said, the old way, it sounds like like if I have more stuff, yeah. if I, you know, focus on myself more, then I'll have more things. But mm-hmm. the harder you work towards these things, the less the less happy you actually feel. And there's this quote that springs to mind by Naval Ravikant, and he said, "Desire is a contract that you make with yourself to be unhappy until you get what you want." And it's like, well, hang on a minute, you know, like, what is it that we are desiring? Because mm. that, from the sounds of it, is desiring materialistic items of yeah. look how much stuff I've acquired. And mm-hmm. you know, I've said before, I know a lot of miserable millionaires. So how do we transition then into this kind of old way of thinking about happiness and yeah. more into the new way of thinking about happiness, Stephanie?
Well, I think you nailed it, right? Like, real happiness is about helping other people to be happy. And to your point, when we compare the two, when we look at, you know, okay, here's how I feel when I'm, you know, using all that I am to help other people versus here's how I feel when I'm pursuing all of that stuff that you talked about, there's a real hollowness attached with the latter, right? It's, as you're describing, it ultimately leads to this sense of lack and of frustration and unfulfillment and all those things that come along with it. And so the path that I believe is the secret to happiness involves two things. And the first is being who you really are. So your authentic self, you have so many wonderful gifts to share with the world. There's so much that makes you special that you can offer. And that's what leads to the second part. It's actually giving of yourself. You have to contribute to other people and try and help them in the ways that you can. And it's through the intertwining of both that personal self along with the way that self is connected to the broader world that we ultimately are able to not only experience the joy that we are looking for, but also to help other people to experience that joy too and to make our world a better place. So it's really the ultimate win-win, in my opinion, right? We can experience happiness for ourselves while also creating it for other people.
Yeah, I think it's super important. Something that I would say is you're rewarded in this world based on the value that you give to it. And I think it's so important mm-hmm. to be find what it is that gives you purpose and meaning. Yeah. Get very good at that thing mm. because then you become valuable to others. But in that pursuit of it, you know, you add your own value to yourself because you are needed by others. Mm. And it's a very difficult thing because I think some people have this, as you said, this kind of old happy way of I need to be worthy mm. of something in order to be liked by others mm. in order to be valued by the world, when mm. actual fact, you know, if I think back to a lot of the things that I've pursued in my life and I thought, am I pursuing these things to make myself happy, or am I pursuing these things to tell myself that I'm worthy enough mm. for these things?
Yeah.
And you know, people ask me a lot of this of, you know, what would you tell your 20-year-old self? It's mm. a popular question. And you know, the questions that come back to me for that, or the answers that come back to it, is that you're loved mm. and you know, you'll be fine. You know, it's just yeah. you spend some time valuing yourself and not comparing yourself to, mm. to other people. And I yeah. think, you know, it's going on this journey of finding what it is that you enjoy doing. And yeah. then of course the whole, for me, like the happiness of it is getting better at a thing which you enjoy mm. doing yeah, and turning right. up. And I was reading your book this morning, Stephanie, and one of the stories that really kind of popped up for me was a story of Andre Agassi mm. and the difference that he had with his success with, I'm gonna say Rafa Nadal, but it's Roger Federer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could you talk to us a little bit about the difference in that? Because from the outside in, you've got two of the most successful tennis players in the world. Mm-hmm. And we always say, something I always say is success leaves clues. Mm. But just because somebody has achieved an amazing amount of success doesn't, you know, there's a big difference between happiness and success. And mm. I think that story is such an important one for people to understand.
Yeah, of course. I love that story too. So the high level version of it is that Andre Agassi, who we all know, was a tennis champion, one of the best that's ever played. And he actually never wanted to be a tennis player. It was something that his dad chose for him. His dad decided when he was a little kid that he was going to be the best tennis player in the world. And he essentially pushed him into that field and became an overbearing force in his life, forcing him to do all of these things in order to become the best. So it wasn't actually something that Agassi really wanted to do. And because of that, his tennis success never made him happy. And he often talks about how he actually hates tennis. He hates playing it. It's not something he derived any sort of joy or fulfillment from. And then we contrast that with Roger Federer, who began playing tennis as a kid because he loved it. He also played soccer. He ultimately decided he had to choose between one of those two sports in order to, you know, specialize and, as you're saying, like, get better at it and really focus in on it. And he chose tennis. And of course, again, becoming a legend in the field, one of the best of all time, if not the best. And Federer loves tennis. He loves playing. He loves picking up the ball. He still loves doing it. And that's because it's intrinsically motivated for him. It comes from inside of him. So in the book, I talk about the big difference between these two different types of motivation and how they can power us forward. And there are so many misconceptions out there about motivation. So much of what I see online is flat out wrong and not actually reflective of the science. And there's a lot of people who I think are trying to achieve their goals just relying on habits or willpower or, kind of like a strict reward system where they, you know, provide themselves with feedback based upon how often they do certain activities. And I actually don't think you should do that. I think that you should find the thing that brings you internal motivation, that gives you that sense of pushing forward, because that's what will help you to achieve your goals and to get better and to continue to make an impact on the world. But it doesn't feel painful. It feels joyful. And I'm sure, you know, I'm sure, Jay, like, you've experienced this in your work, right? Like, because you're intrinsically motivated to do it.
Yeah, I think having a passion and a purpose makes a massive difference. And, you know, a lot of people are, you know, searching for motivation. And the essence of motivation is, you know, when you feel good about doing something, it becomes much easier to do.
Yeah.
And this is the one thing that people struggle with, especially when it comes to health and fitness, because there is going to be a period of time where it's not going to be as motivating to do. It's not going to be as good to do.
Yeah.
And this is where you need to think of different things such as discipline. And discipline is doing things sometimes regardless of how you feel. But the whole point of it is because if you carry on doing it, you eventually will get that feeling. And I think this is the real difference between, in my eyes, happiness and fulfillment. Because, you know, happiness is a feeling that people are searching for in order to achieve certain things. And fulfillment is the actual outcome-based goal. Because for me, I think fulfillment is the thing that you work really hard towards something and then you actually get the benefit from doing it once it's complete.
Yeah.
Instead of this emptiness feeling of that wasn't it. And when I was reading, I'd written down a quote from Jim Carrey, and he said, "I think everybody should get rich and famous and do everything they ever dreamed of so they can see it's not the answer."
Wow.
And I think that's super, super deep, because when you think about it, we're all trying to figure out this thing that we're doing with our lives, and we think that we're eventually going to get there, and suddenly we're going to get, you know, we're going to complete the level, we're going to be floating on a cloud. And, you know, I made this massive mistake about 5 or 6 years ago when, you know, I set this massive goal of the year of having these massive goals of building a business, writing a book and everything. And I got to the end of the year and I went through a really bad depression for a good 5 or 6 months. And it was this exact thing that you speak about, where you get there, you float on a cloud for a week, and then you realize this isn't it. This is not what I'm doing. And, you know, you think that you forget that when you achieve all those things, you still have another 50 years left on the planet.
Yeah.
So if the game doesn't complete right now. And I relate it very much to, I have this example of Neil Armstrong and the team going to the moon at age 32 and then coming back and then being depressed because once you've landed on the moon at 32 years of age, there's pretty much not...
Where do you go from there?
Exactly. But I think it's just important to understand that, of course you're going to go from there. And that comes back to this
you know, happiness, this fulfillment, this kind of comparison of, as you said, like external things that are going to get you there versus kind of those internal. And I think something that you said in the book is about, you know, really understanding the difference between intrinsic motivations and extrinsic motivations. So I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit really about defining the difference between those in people's lives.
Yeah, of course. So if you think about motivation as a spectrum that runs from end to end, at one end is extrinsic motivation and at the other end is intrinsic. So extrinsic motivation is doing something because of the reward that you're going to get, because you're going to be punished or because you want to avoid something. So it's always about these external forces that are being imposed upon you. So extrinsic motivation is, you know, always going to be some part of our lives because there are things that, as you said, that we always have to do that aren't going to be enjoyable. They're not necessarily going to be things that we would ever choose to do if we had to, you know, like no one wants to go to the dentist or to, you know, have to go through a annoying paperwork task at the, you know, in America, the DMV where you get your license, right? There's all these things that you have to do. And you do them because there's going to be something bad that happens to you if you don't do it, or there's going to be something that there's going to be some sort of reward. But the difference is that with extrinsic motivation, it can also be the forces of our society that tell you what you should do with your life and the things that you believe that you're supposed to do. And so if you think about, maybe this is something that's happened to, you know, to you or to somebody in your life, you felt like there was a path that you had to walk in order to be worthy, that you had to do these things in order to be happy, whether it was to get a certain job or to please your parents by moving to a certain place or by doing certain activities or by getting married or whatever it is, right? There are all these pressures that we feel. And whenever we pursue those things, we're not actually going to be experiencing true motivation, that one that powers us forward that we're talking about, because that one comes from intrinsic motivation, and that is something that comes from within. When you find something to be inherently meaningful or enjoyable or satisfying, and the real difference between the two, the way I like to think about it, is that the extrinsic motivation, the reward is at the end, right? It's like what we're talking about. It's this idea that once you get there, you'll get on your little cloud and float away and be happy. But with intrinsic motivation, the reward is in the doing. It's in the showing up every day. It's in the beauty of existing, of growing, of learning, of contributing to the world. You actually get the joy from that intrinsic activity. And what's happening is that emotion is telling you that your needs are being satisfied, your true psychological needs. So you can pursue all of the extrinsic goals that you want to, but I think it's important for people to know that it's never going to fulfill your true needs. It's never going to help you to get what you want and to give you those feelings. You might, let's say, decide that, hey, I'm going to make a lot of money in this job that I hate doing, and you know, that money will be able to go out and buy me fulfillment in some form or another. And that's, again, that's, we all have the power to choose what we want to do with our lives and whether that's something that works for you or not. But the process of doing it is not actually going to make you happy. And that's why you hear from people like Agassi in the book. I never enjoyed it. I hated doing it. It wasn't fulfilling for me. I was holding my trophy and felt nothing. And that's why we hear from people who say, I spent 30 years in this career waiting to get promoted to a partner level role. And then I got there and I was miserable the whole time I did it, and I felt nothing. So You can take that approach, or wherever possible, I want to counsel that you find more of the intrinsic motivation, where you find the joy in doing it, because that's what's going to actually help you to feel happy on a daily basis.
It reminds me of something I've read in a book by Daniel Pink called Drive, and it was a study that showed that artists who get commissioned for their work, it then becomes very difficult to do.
Yes.
Because now there is an outcome for it, and there is needs to produce something rather than the passion for actually painting. And I think that's a great example about this kind of focus for an outcome-based goal instead of just painting, if that makes sense. And I think a lot of people just need to find the thing that they, you know, their version of enjoying spending hours painting something.
Yeah, I love that.
Some of the things you spoke about in the book, Stephanie, are about lies, happiness lies. And I wanted to just kind of explore some of them. And I think the first one is that you are not enough or you are lacking something, because this is, you know, this very much drives us that, you know, a lot of the time we're looking and go, okay, we're not fit, we don't have this in our lives, or we don't have the house, or we don't have the car, we don't have the career, and we want these things.
Mm-hmm.
But where do we go wrong for the desire to have these things and the thought process that goes into it? You know, us telling ourselves that we're not enough and that we're lacking these things and that we need them in order to be happy.
Yeah, this is, I would say, probably the biggest struggle that I hear the most. And I think that in general, we as people have the hardest time with. It's, I'm not good enough. And it takes so many different forms. As you said, there's all these conditions that we apply to our worth. Once I get that, then I'll be good enough. I'll be worthy. I'll deserve love. And what I want people to know is that actually you're worthy right now. You're completely worthy just as you are. And nothing you do will ever change that. So you could go out and be a massive success today or tomorrow, and it doesn't make you more worthy. And you could go out and make a massive mistake today or tomorrow, and it doesn't make you less worthy. You as a human being are always the exact same amount of worthiness. You can't add things on or take things away. And I think that this recognition of there's nothing that you need to change about yourself in order to prove that you deserve love and kindness and support. And that comes from other people and it comes from yourself. Once we can acknowledge that, then this quest to fill up that hole inside of us with that stuff that we talked about, or those goals that aren't actually the right fit for our well-being, it becomes a lot less urgent, because we can look at ourselves and say, well, I'm good. I'm good as I am. And yeah, that means I can grow and change too. I'm not dismissing the desire for growth, and we can talk about that if that's of interest. But as I am, I'm worthy and I'm good. And that recognition is a work in progress. So I think it's going to be something we're all working on for all of our lives, because again, we live in a world that's determined to tell us all of the ways that we're not good enough. It wants us to know that we are going to, you know, feel bad about ourselves. So we go out and buy more stuff, or, you know, do things to prove how special and important we are. But if we can start to halt that in its tracks and embrace our worthiness, then from there, everything can change. Even just holding on to a small glimpse of it and saying, you know, I made a mistake at work today, and it wasn't a super big deal. Normally I would beat myself up for it in a huge way, because I think that making any mistakes means that I'm not good enough. But instead, I'm just going to say, hey, it's okay. People make mistakes. I'm a person, therefore I get to make mistakes as well. It's transformational.
Do you think it's another paradox that a lot of people are, how do I put this? That a lot of people are worried about saying to themselves that they're enough, because they're worried that if they do, that they won't pursue and get the goal that they actually want if they do say they're enough.
Yes, I absolutely do. I think that we have been, you know, again, we have been conditioned into believing that motivation and achievement come from self-criticism. So if I think about my own life and how I used to treat myself, that was exactly my playbook. It was, okay, you messed up today, so you need to be really mean to yourself so that you never forget how bad this was. And you need to yell at yourself so that you get up early tomorrow and work twice as hard in order to move forward, right? Like, it was all about this incredible self-criticism as a source of motivation. But what the science shows is that actually backfires. So if you are using self-criticism to motivate yourself, you are actually persisting in spite of your self-talk. It's not because of your self-talk. It's because you're strong enough that you're still going, I really want to achieve this thing, or I want to get better. You're attributing it to the wrong things. If in fact you treat yourself with more kindness and acceptance, what it does is it makes you more accepting of your mistakes so that you can learn from them, right? Which we all want. We all know that we're not perfect and we're never going to be able to get it all right every single time. It helps you to be more persistent in terms of moving towards those. And then, of course, that contributes to goal achievement. So if you want to try being kinder to yourself, you might be surprised to discover that it actually helps you to move you forward closer towards the things that you want.
Another one that you said Stephanie, is that you're on your own. And I think, you know, a lot of guys that I speak to, including myself, you know, is we find it very difficult to ask for help.
Yeah.
Incredibly difficult. And I just wanted to explore that for a little bit, because, you know, how do people go about understanding that actually asking for help is such a powerful thing to do, not only, you know, not only for yourself, but for other people too. And I think that's the important thing.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I think that especially for men, as you said, this struggle to ask for help is really pervasive and surely contributes to so many of the men's mental health crises that are occurring and the challenges. I think that, you know, this really comes from our individualistic culture, which tells us that in order to be worthy, you have to be independent, you have to be self-sufficient, you can never lean on other people, you have to do everything by yourself, you have to make it look easy, you have to be, you know, the provider, the success, all of these different things. And what this really does is separate us from one another. And when we are separate from one another, we miss out on the sources of happiness, which are giving and receiving help. So when you ask somebody else for help, what you're doing is you're bringing them close to you and saying, you know, hey, I am a person on my own, but I can't do it on my own. And actually, I need to be connected to you in order to move forward. And it's those connections that nourish our well-being and help us to find happiness in our lives. And this reticence that we have to ask for help from other people comes from this fear that, again, if I have to lean on somebody else, it means that I'm weak and therefore I'm not worthy. I'm not good enough. So it connects back to that first lie that we were talking about. And in fact, when you ask another person for help, what you're doing is giving them a chance to be happy. Because if happiness comes from helping other people, then if you close yourself off, if you separate yourself from the world, you are not allowing them to contribute to your life, and therefore you are limiting their ability to experience happiness. If you can recognize that, hey, if I'm going to ask you for help, Jay, when I do that, I'm giving you a chance to support me and therefore to experience the joy that you're looking for. It's not actually something that's selfish. It's in many ways, it's an act of service as well. And that mental shift can make taking the leap to ask for help, especially if it's uncomfortable, a little bit easier for people.
Yeah, something I explored, and I reminded myself that if I had more people in the world like me, then I wouldn't have a job, because I wouldn't be able to help anybody. because no one would be asking for my help.
And yeah,
I wouldn't be in a job. So it's just kind of this realization. There was another kind of quote that I'd written down. Have you read the Boy, the Mole, the Fox, and the Horse?
Yeah.
And it was a quote. He said, "What's the bravest thing you ever said?" And asked the boy, and "Help," said the horse. And I think, I love that book as well. There's, you know, I've read some really deep philosophical books, and who knew that a children's book had so much wisdom when it came to happiness and fulfillment.
It's so true, isn't it? It's like it's a masterpiece of distilling down what actually really matters most.
So, connection, Stephanie, how important is connection when it comes to happiness?
It's everything. It's the most important thing. You know, there's really no argument about it in the scientific literature. The single most important factor for your happiness is your connections with others and strengthening and cultivating them. And I think that that's really why I feel so strongly about helping people to see the and to walk the path from old happy to new happy. Because when we think about our relationships and our connections, you know, I started to reflect on that scientific research and think about, well, what is it that makes up a connection? What is it that makes up a strong and healthy relationship? And what I discovered is that it's helping, right? It's being in service to one another, of giving and receiving, this sense of kindness and mutuality and compassion. And through that giving and receiving, your bonds strengthen and they become more wound together, and you become closer and you experience all of that joy and fulfillment. And so that's why our connections matter, because they're the canvas for our joy and for our ability to experience well-being in our lives. And I think that so much of the advice and content out there is kind of neglecting that scientific fact that, you know, you you can be happy by yourself. You can do all of these things on your own and without other people. And if we're not careful, that can really devolve back into old Happy's individualistic messaging about, you know, doing it all alone, right? Like you can be happy all by yourself. And when I think about my own happiness and even just thinking about, you know, the last week of my life, the greatest moments of joy that I had in that week were through connecting with other people in one way or another. And I think that if we can start to bring awareness to that and to the importance and the centrality of connections, then we can make decisions that prioritize them appropriately. And then, of course, the reward is more happiness.
I've always been fascinated with happiness and the chemicals in your body, and just something like you said there with connection, obviously the four happiness chemicals being dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins. And, you know, with these, you know, the oxytocin, serotonin, a lot of that comes from hugs, connecting with others, talking to other people. And of course, dopamine being one that can be very positive in your life, but also very negative as well. When it comes to social media, Stephanie, how do you think it's affecting happiness in 2024?
I feel like we could spend a whole episode talking just about this. I'm curious to hear your thoughts too. I think that social media is like most things. It can be a positive thing and a helpful thing, and it can also be a harmful thing. And when I started the new Happy, I didn't have a personal social media account. I really had a strong aversion to what I was seeing on social media, but I felt as though that was sort of the only chance and the channel that I had to reach people. And so I sort of, you know, bit the bullet and decided to engage with it anyways. And I discovered, you know, that I was wrong, that there's all of this joy and beauty and community and connection that can be found through social. And the opportunities of being able to connect and to help other people and to learn, they're so extraordinary, right? It's just absolutely magical when you think about what it enables. And at the same time, of course, social media can also be something that amplifies the worst of old Happy in our lives. It can show us, hey, here are all the ways that you're not good enough, and here are all the people who are better than you, quote unquote. And, you know, you need to work harder, you need to push more, you need to show how great you are. And in fact, like, it can become this vehicle for us actually perpetuating old Happy in the world. We can use it in order to say, hey, I'm the best. Look how successful I am. Look how independent I am. Or we can use it as a tool that helps us to truly connect with ourselves and with others. And I think that we need to both bring that kind of individual level of discernment upon the way that we're approaching it, and also hopefully we need to integrate policies and build new platforms that actually incentivize certain behaviors and the right ones. But the kind of opportunity here is that we can use it to be of service, to connect, and to contribute to the world. And that's a beautiful thing that can be incredibly beneficial for your well-being.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's as with anything, I think social media is a blessing and a curse. And something that I say to people is that when people talk about algorithms and what they see on the news feed, I say that all the algorithm is doing is showing you more of what it is that you want to see. And if you're not in a good place and you are looking for short-term happiness with things, a lot of that unfortunately comes in at the suffering of others and of low quality information that might get a laugh or a giggle, but it's not going to change your life.
And it's
an easy cycle to get in, that the algorithm just looks and goes, oh, you're looking at arguments on the internet, you're looking at news, you're looking at drama, so I'm just going to show you more of that that thing. So it's one of the things which I think, once again, you need some form of education to understand that, you know, you need to have control over your social media habits. You need to actually actively tell the algorithm that you know, for example, I'll be just like anyone. I will get caught up in some police car chase on TikTok or some argument on the internet. And when I find myself very naturally, like everybody else, just gravitating into it, I'll press those three dots at the top right of the platform that I'm on and just put not interested.
So smart.
And I just wish everybody would be able to do that, because my news feeds 90% of the time give me all the stuff that makes me go, wow, that's awesome, that's you know, insightful, you know, I'm bookmarking so much better stuff. It enables me to do my job better, to create better content, and of course to connect with so many more like-minded people who want the same thing. So blessing, but also a curse. And as we all know, social media isn't social, so a lot of the time when I build communities and groups online, I make sure that we at least gather all together in some form minimally every quarter.
I mean,
ideally for some of my clients it's got to be monthly. And that there is so much power in, you know, connecting together online, but there's even more power connecting together in person, even though it's so a lot more difficult. I think when you make the effort to meet in person, every single person that kind of walks away from that day are so glad that they did. And it's just so much more impactful, really connecting with human beings in real life, especially when you're all passionate about the same things.
Yeah, that's amazing. And, you know, to your point, going back to the, you know, the biological responses in the body, we have experiences when we're in person with one another that provide us with greater well-being, right? That true connection of being present and of being engaged in that relationship, it supports your physical health and it supports your mental health in a way that is really difficult, if not impossible, to replicate online, especially when you're engaged in, you know, kind of like a commenting interface or something like that. So what you're describing is so powerful and important to invest that time and energy in coming together in person. That's really inspiring.
Yeah, something I remind myself, I remember this quote, and my brain works on quotes, so you'll hear me say a lot of quotes.
I love it.
There was a quote that said, do things that make you forget you have a mobile phone.
I love that.
And I'm always actively seeing, I mean, I do regular C-dips. Every Sunday I meet up with a group of guys and we all go for a C-dip together. Once again, can't have your mobile phone. Yes, okay, we maybe time-lapse it on the beach, but when we're actually in the sea, you know, we haven't got it. I'm about a year into doing jiu-jitsu, and that's incredible, because you literally just, firstly, you put your phone away for a good hour, and secondly, you're actually having physical contact with somebody else, albeit they're trying to break your arm and choke you out, but it's, you get you know, a super extreme version of connection there. And it's, once again, it's great to like actually connect with people and put that mobile phone away and actually have good quality connection three or four times a week. So I found it, as you know, I'm 39 this year, that it's even more important as we get older, when it's even more difficult to find friends as you get older, to find those kind of reasons to actually meet in person on a regular basis with people, which I think is so, so important.
It is. And it's, you know, it's funny, right? To your point, it can become easy, especially as you get older and you have other responsibilities in your life, of pushing those things off or saying they're not important, or you'll do it next time or whatever it is. But in fact, as you're describing, it's one of the most important things that we can do. And it's a priority on a level of, you know, like you, I think we need to start thinking about connection as like a keystone habit in our lives, and of something that's just as important as eating enough vegetables that day or prioritizing your sleep. Yes, you need to do those things, and you also ideally need to find ways to engage in connection like you're describing.
So people will be listening to this now, Stephanie, and thinking, okay, I've been caught up in the old ways of happiness. And I want to start now moving into the new ways of happy. Where do you think somebody should start their kind of first journey into changing some of these happiness habits, shall we say?
I think that, you know, there's sort of two recommendations that I think can be really helpful for someone starting. The first is to spend a little time really learning about who you are deep down, your authentic self, and what are, you know, the unique strengths and talents and gifts that you have that make you feel alive when you use them? What are the passions that drive you? Is there a purpose that really matters to you, something that you wish you could see in the world? Sort of taking this, you know, like almost a self-inventory of who you are deep down when you're not being affected by other people's opinions or by what the world told you that you needed to do. And then figuring out, okay, what's one small way that I can act upon those in a way that helps other people and that serves them? So, you know, to your point, like, what is, let's say that you discover that you love teaching, you love helping other people through instructing them in some way. There are so many different ways that you could offer that gift up to the world. You could potentially try and integrate more teaching into your job. You could switch jobs and actually become a teacher. You could start teaching people things on social media or in your local community. You could start advising younger people and being a mentor. You know, there's all of these different opportunities that you can seek out. And when you're looking at all of those, you probably are going to have some sort of like gut or heart-centered reaction of like, oh, that feels right to me, or that feels interesting or exciting. And whatever you get that like little thump on, try and do it, make it a priority. You know, I think that so often with the pursuit of happiness or well-being, we get kind of caught in our heads, like planning for the time when we're going to do it, or thinking if, oh, I just think about doing this, then it's going to work. But in reality, you actually have to get out there and you have to do it. You have to kind of take the first step, even if it's really small. And I think, you know, Jay, like with your expertise, the same is kind of true with your health and your fitness as well, right? Like you can't think your way into a healthier state of being. You actually have to kind of show up and do the exercises. And in the same way, you can think about happiness. Like you have to go out there and be yourself and give of yourself. And it doesn't have to be huge. You don't have to change your life, but just thinking about one small way that you can start to do that. And ideally what will happen is you'll have that intrinsic motivation come in because you'll feel really good after doing it or while you're doing it. And that will then motivate you to do it again and to keep growing and to keep expanding the ways in which you decide to pursue those gifts and offer them up to other people.
Yeah, I think with me, I really resonate with that. And yeah, just thinking about it, and this is very much what I talk about, is that my whole day is spent negotiating with myself. Sometimes negotiating with myself to not do something straight away. And sometimes negotiating that we need to do this thing before we can get on with the rest of the day. And I'll give you a couple of examples of that. This morning I spent an extra 30 minutes in bed, even though I'd set my alarm. I'm an ex-British Army soldier. I'm disciplined. I need to get up. I need to go and do the thing. But my son Archer's just come in for about 3 o'clock this morning.
Yeah.
He was fast asleep. He was cuddled up to me. And I was like, do you know what? He's 4 years of age. There is a limited time in this world where I'm going to get the opportunity to spend 30 minutes in bed with my son. So I am actually going to negotiate myself to let myself off the hook for 30 minutes to enjoy this moment right now before going to do the thing that I will once again have to negotiate myself to do. And that's, I have a cold plunge in my garden, which I go in every single day. Yeah. And that's a daily negotiation that I do not want to do that. And I make myself do that no matter what. And you know, that for me kind of trains my discipline muscle of not wanting to do something, doing it anyway, and knowing that the feeling after I've done it is incredible. And that's what we're really focused on. Not the feel, not the 30 minutes of negotiating going in there. So I think it's understanding that, you know, it's these little negotiations of getting the feeling and after you do something, not before sometimes. And once again, letting yourself off the hook certain times and not letting yourself off the hook in other things. Once again, and it's difficult because it's, I think the talent is knowing when to let yourself off the hook.
Totally.
And then knowing when you need to say shut up and you know, jump in that cold plunge. So.
That's so insightful. I love that framework. And it's so true, isn't it? A day of negotiating with yourself. That's brilliant.
Yeah. And once again, you know, I don't get it right all the time, but most of the time it's just this little voice in my head, which that's the real person that we need to kind of convince.
Yeah.
And once again, when I do all the things, when I do, let's just say, 6 out of 10 of those a day correctly, I'm a hell of a lot more happy and fulfilled.
So true.
For my day. So Stephanie, your new book new happy. Where can we get a pre-order? I believe it's on pre-order. When is the book released?
The book is coming out in the UK on May 16th. So up until then, you can pre-order it at newhappybook.com.
Fantastic. And where can people find out more about you, Stephanie?
You can find out more and follow our work at thenewhappy.com or everywhere on social media at newhappyco.
And I highly recommend you follow. I think it was about a couple of months ago I followed, and I think I was saying to Stephanie is illustrations really just tattoo my brain when it comes to things. And Stephanie shares some of the most amazing kind of infographics and illustrations when it comes to really understanding happiness.
Thank you so much.
Well, Stephanie, thank you for coming on the Mindset Muscle podcast. I finish every podcast with the same quote, and it's what you put in your body affects how you look and how you feel. And what you put in your head affects what you think and what you do. And today you've been filling your heads with me, Jay Alderton, and Stephanie Harrison. Stephanie, thank you for coming on the Mindset Muscle podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a joy. My time, none of you people can tell me to stop. My town, my crown, we know what it takes to be reaching the top. We're reaching the top. We're reaching the top. We know what it takes to